Welcome to the Retro Nostalgia Podcast with Matthew Ramirez, your go-to education and entertainment source for all things 80s and retro video games. In this podcast, you'll learn little-known facts on a variety of nostalgic topics, leaving you longing for the awesomeness of yesteryear. If you're ready for a blast from the past, a tubular new episode is starting now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Nostalgia Podcast, your go-to podcast for all things 80s and retro video games. So, as I've gone along here making some episodes, I've kind of touched on some of the topics that I've enjoyed from the 80s, such as New Wave, and some of the old consoles, such as the Atari. So, there is a topic, though, that I haven't gotten to yet, and I really wanted to get to for a while. Because for me, this topic kind of brings back many good memories as far as, you know, just reading and finding out information. And what I'm talking about here is video game magazines. Video game magazines, not really around nowadays, but back in the 80s and 90s, they were the one source really for anything you wanted to know, whether it be about consoles, upcoming releases, or any of the new rumors going around with some consoles that were never released as well. So video game magazines really had a huge impact on people that were gamers or people that were into technology. I feel like consoles themselves were able to kind of advance technology as especially with TV as they were released, and you know, video game magazines were a way to kind of stay on track with this advancement in technology as well. So yeah, I mean, what else can I say here? I mean, video game magazines, they were kind of the all-in-one kind of, I don't want to say Bible, but for people back then, there was really no other way to get information. I mean, this was before the internet. There was no real, I guess I want to say, like channel like G4 TV, which actually is coming back for those of you who were fans of the original G4 back in the day, where they would have a TV show that was all about video games and reviews, stuff like that. In the 80s and 90s, this wasn't even a thing. So for a lot of people, getting video game magazines every month was the way to keep track and stay, you know, along with whatever the new game was or the new console was or the new information was at the time regarding their favorite console. So for me, video game magazines, I guess I was introduced to it fairly young, honestly, and my first interaction with them was when my brother kind of he did a little hand-me-down thing where I got some of his old Electronic Gaming Monthly magazines. Now, for some of you guys who may not be aware of this magazine was pretty popular back in the day. It was originally released in 1988, and they had a lot of spin-offs and special editions, some of which I'll get to here as I go along. But Electronic Gaming Monthly ended up becoming my favorite, or I should say go-to video game magazine. I just like the format that they had, especially in the 90s. They really kind of pioneered how information should be shared, and their review crew was really good as well, especially the way they conducted reviews. What I liked about their system was that they would have four reviewers for each game. And as time went along, they ended up going down to three reviewers, I believe, and then they changed the rating system eventually. But as far as I'm aware, during the 90s, it was always four reviewers, and they would all review the same game. So this would give, obviously, the scores a little bit more balanced, because these reviewers would have different tastes when it came to what games they like, what games they didn't like, and I think it could be more objective as opposed to a single reviewer who, I mean, their intention is not to put their opinion into the review, but at some point it will be biased because it may be a game they're just, or I should say a genre that they're just not into. And vice versa, if it's a genre they're very much into, they might inflate their rating. So I think that the system that EGM had kind of prevented that from happening, and got, you know, pretty much got some pretty balanced reviews for the most part as far as gaming went. But to go back to, like I was saying, my story here with EGM, my brother gave me these old magazines that were from the early 90s. And then one of them I remember well was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle one. There was one that had a cover of the Ninja Turtles, and I believe that was for TMNT4, which is released on the Super Nintendo. So I want to say this was probably 91 or 92 issue. I think actually it was November 92, and it was actually, now that I remember right, the Hyperstone heist for the Sega Genesis. So a great game, and that was kind of my intro into video game magazines. I flipped through the book, and for those of you that were around growing up when these video game magazines were in their heyday, you would know that one of the things, or one of the popular things people would do, is just go through these magazines over and over, right, until the next issue arrived, or, you know, until there was a special edition that arrived in the mail or at the store or whatever it may be. It was one of those things, one of those experiences that I guess is not really a thing now, or not as common, especially with technology and how fast information moves. But back then, honestly, these video game magazines would be released monthly, and once that issue arrived in the mail, or whether they bought it at the store, they would have to wait a whole month until the next issue arrived. So I, like I'm sure a lot of other people did, just kind of went through each issue repeatedly over and over, you know, every day or every other day, just to kind of see, oh, maybe I missed something, or maybe there's a section that I skipped, and I would go back and reread it just to get my full time and full money's worth, I guess, from that issue. I mean, video game magazines had a lot of content. Like I said, one of those was interviews. So a lot of times the writers would interview a video game developer or a company or, you know, a big creator. So they would always have interviews depending on what kind of game was the hot game at the time. Stuff like that. They would also interview people who were in the big companies themselves. So like with PlayStation, they would interview like the head PlayStation person for Sony, or vice versa with Sega or Nintendo. So these interviews were, I think, a great way to, you know, attract more people to the magazines, and for the people themselves reading it, I think it was a great way to get to know these people at the top who were pretty much in charge of their favorite console and deciding what games would be made and what games wouldn't be made, or I should say greenlit to be made. So that was another, I think, advantage that video game magazines had, was just the amount of content they could fit every month, you know, compared to, obviously online is a little different format, because like I said earlier, you get information pretty much daily, but it may not be as much, maybe like 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 stories per day, compared to a magazine, which obviously you're counting for a full month here. They could probably compact with a lot of info regarding video games. So like I said, one of those was the interviews. Another thing that video game magazines really specialized in was previews. So with previews, they would have pictures or screenshots of video games. Early on in the earlier days, like the early 90s, they would have actual pictures that they would take of the game. So this was before computers were widespread and they were using more technology to actually take screenshots. They would actually just take pictures and post them on the magazine. But either way, I mean, they did their job, which was to catch readers' attention and kind of display what the video game would look like as it was getting closer to release. So the preview section was always a nice kind of intro into the magazine to kind of see, oh, these are new games that are coming out, what games do I need to look forward to. And it was always nice to see a video game that you were looking forward to, or in a series that you liked, that was kind of come out, and kind of keep seeing those updates. So for example, something like Super Mario 64 which I'm sure had lots of updates in the mid-90s, and people were just, you know, being awed by how the difference was from Super Mario World to Super Mario 64, or the, you know, maybe previews, screenshots for Metal Gear Solid, Soul Calibur, and stuff like that, you know, getting into the later late 90s here. But previews and magazines, I think, were another reason why people really got into them, and they just wanted to see what was coming up. And especially back then in the day, like I said, no internet. This was really the only way for them to plan ahead as gamers, to see what game they wanted to save their money up for, or console. You know, there was lots of consoles that were released in the 90s, and this was the best way to kind of be on top of the situation here, and say, okay, I'm going to save up money for this console, or I'm going to save up money for that console. So that video game magazines really were really important when it came to like planning out and previews. Another section that video game magazines had was when readers were right in. So they would submit letters to the magazine. And, I mean, this was various topics that readers would go write in about, whether it be trying to get hints on something, or, you know, rants even on certain video game topics, even asking for jobs or stuff like that. So I feel like a way to just get the readers' voices out there and kind of help the readers feel a part of the magazine themselves, you know. So that part I honestly wouldn't kind of read over. It wasn't really my thing. I always wanted to go more to the video games and what was going on in Japan and stuff like that. But definitely, I'm sure there were some readers that would always want to read what other gamers thought about certain situations or certain games or whatever it may be. And the letters to the editor sections were always the go-to for that. Another thing about video game magazines, like I've gone over the previews and the interviews, they also had like tips and tricks kind of sections. So this would be obviously where they would have cheat codes. And early on, they would have a huge list, because people were kind of discovering cheat codes as they would go on in games, right? So especially in the late 80s, early 90s to late 90s, when cheat codes were so very popular in video games, and they would always update depending on certain games, especially the popular ones like GoldenEye, where people wanted to know everything that needed to be known for like multiplayer or weapons and stages and stuff like that. And there were some pretty popular cheats on there, especially... Oh man, going back to like Street Fighter 2, when that first came out, people were wanting to know like if there was any cheat codes to get duplicate characters when they were fighting with their friend, or using the boss characters and stuff like that. So cheat codes definitely had a presence in video game magazines, to the point that they actually made a magazine just centered around cheat codes, and that came out later on. That was called Tips and Tricks. And I'll get to a kind of a list of video game magazines towards the end here. But yeah, cheat codes were a big thing in every magazine. And all the major ones carried them. And like I said, there were even spin-offs that would just focus on cheat codes or strategy guides and stuff like that. There was also, obviously, the reviews, which... depending on the time and era here, people would really use to kind of plan out, again, like the previews, what game they would really invest in. So going back to the 90s, and a lot of people that were growing up around then, obviously they weren't working, or they may be working, but they had, you know, intro jobs, so working minimum wage and stuff like that. So I feel like reviews were definitely important at that time, again, before internet. So people could make the best informed choice on what video games to invest in and actually use their money on. So, like I said, the EGM crew, they had, four reviewers to review a game, and they would have four scores. And then they would pretty much, you could take that average and see what the game actually averaged out. But like I said, I think that was well balanced, and it was a good way of maintaining objectivity, or at least trying to. But there were lots of magazines back then, and each magazine kind of did things their own way. So like Nintendo Power, they kind of only used one reviewer. There was only one score. GamePro, again, only one reviewer. Game Informer. Game Informer, I believe, actually may have had two scores. It may, if I remember right. I haven't read a Game Informer in a long time, and obviously it's changed since the 90s, but if I remember right, in the 90s, they had like one main review score, and then they had like a second score that they would call like a second opinion by a different person. So that was a little better. I always think in general for reviewing a game, you want to have obviously as much objectivity as possible, so you're not getting any bias in there. And you know, again, some people, they're not into certain genres. So the more opinions you have from different backgrounds and different, you know, likes and dislikes, it's always going to be better for an overall score. And so I always go towards video game magazines that had more than just one reviewer or one review score. But that's how pretty much it worked back then, depending on the magazine. And again, like I said, this was where people would decide what games were good, what games were not good. And especially at a time when, in the late 80s, early 90s, when a lot of the video games we take for granted now to be good, or the big names like Final Fantasy or Street Fighter or Resident Evil, stuff like that, they were not known. They were new, you know, new franchises, new names that people didn't know about. And honestly, back then, a lot of people would be taking a chance because they didn't know any background on the game. So definitely a review and a fairly unbiased review, objective review, would definitely make a difference for new franchises. And it could, I think, make or break of game success, because there wasn't as much word of mouth, because there was no internet yet, or there was no like boardrooms and stuff like that. And if there were, not many people had internet yet. So really, I think reviews made a big difference, and especially was a big reason that many people bought video game magazines back in the day. Well, since I kind of went over the major sections of these video game magazines, now I kind of wanted to move on to some of these magazines themselves and kind of name some of these out, see if you guys remember them, or if you don't, maybe you can go ahead and check them out once you're done here listening to the episode, and kind of see what you missed out on, or you know, just didn't know about, and now you can kind of explore and find out that new magazine. I think it's always a good thing to kind of rediscover things from the past. That's a big reason why I kind of make this podcast. I want people to go back, and you know, it's always fun to rediscover something or find something for the first time. Kind of already talked about one was Electronic Gaming Monthly. Again, that was a big video game magazine back in the 90s. They had, again, four reviewers, and the review crew consisted of rotating characters, or I should say rotating writers, as the 90s went along. But they pretty much can be split into two eras here, the mid or early to mid 90s, and then the mid 90s to the late 90s, as far as how that review crew was split during the decade. And again, they used four reviewers to score a game, and they would have like, or you not have an average, but you could take their scores, average them out, and kind of see how a game scored overall. And again, they kind of, I think, did this to be more objective, and I think it was a good idea on their part. So EGM was pretty cool in that they would have info from Japan or feature previews of video games in Japan, which was always a plus, because obviously lots of games back then were coming from Japan. They also ended up getting spin-offs. So things, they had a certain magazine that just focused on cheat codes. So that was one spin-off. It started off as EGM2. And it was eventually finished its run as Expert Gamer in the late, or actually early 2000s. So that was one of their spinoffs. They also had special edition magazines that kind of were buyer's guides. So they would have buyer's guides for like the Super Nintendo, called Super Nintendo Buyer's Guide. And they would focus on just all Super Nintendo stuff, the games, the peripherals, the accessories, consoles, stuff like that, or I should say console bundles. So that was another spinoff that they would have. There was also, and these were my favorite spinoffs, the video game holiday buyer's guides. So with the buyer guides, or these were kind of released every year, and it would usually be around late October, maybe even early November, depending on, I guess, their schedule and the situation. But these guides, they pretty much contained a summary or a collection of all the info they had throughout the year in their normal monthly magazine. So this would be like a list of reviews they made, a list of or a collection of the previews they made throughout the year, a collection of the reviews they made throughout the year that most people would want to know about, stuff like that, cheat codes too. And it was nice because it was nice to have just like a big book that was like, okay, this is all we went over for 1992. And you guys can just kind of see the major points. I mean, obviously they didn't fit everything in there because it was a lot of information to go over in just one issue. But the fact that they kind of hit on the major points and included the major previews, major reviews, cheats and stuff like that throughout the year was pretty nice. And another thing that they included in their video game holiday buyer's guide was they actually reviewed the consoles themselves, which that was always my favorite part. Always. I always wanted to see which console was rated the highest, especially between the big names. So they started doing this in the early 90s. And back then, it was obviously consoles like Nintendo and Sega Genesis, TurboGrafx 16, the 7800 even still. So they would all kind of be reviewed and compared, and they would kind of receive a score. Again, it was a score from the four reviewers, which was awesome because, again, it could be as unbiased as possible, and they could get different takes on the same console. Again, depending on what that reviewer, their taste was and what they liked, what they didn't like in general. So that was always my favorite feature. I remember reading, I think, 91. Or 90 and 91, they gave Genesis the win because it was doing so well in North America, and Nintendo was, you know, had been out for a while by then, so they kind of gave them a lower score, not to mention it was 8-bit compared to the Genesis 16-bit, so that was the big thing then. And then 92, I think, was the biggest one, or most controversial one, because that was the first video game buyer's guide where both Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis were out, and they actually gave the win to the Sega Genesis. They said it was faster, it was better, and there's a lot of slowdown in those early Super Nintendo games, which didn't do it any favors. So, yeah, but just things like that. They would obviously continue reviewing video game systems throughout the decade, and you guys can kind of go and see what scores they gave those consoles, like the Sega Saturn, the PlayStation, the Dreamcast, even the N64, even the 3DO and the Jaguar were rated on there. So definitely one of my favorite features of any magazine ever. And if you guys ever want to check those out, again, those are the video game holiday buyer's guides from EGM. Moving on to another magazine that was pretty big was GamePro. GamePro was another magazine that focused on video games and in general. So it had like a collection of like the cheat codes, the interview, or not interviews, but previews, reviews, stuff like that, video game features, definitely. And they were just another big name at the time, and they kind of started around the same time that EGM did, so they can kind of be seen as rivals, and they kind of vied for the same reader market as well. So, which was kind of like that teen market, maybe to early 20s. But GamePro was pretty cool too. They only had one reviewer per game, but they had this scale, this rating scale that was based on like expressions, facial expressions, and you guys can look them up. But they're pretty iconic, honestly, and especially the highest rating expression face. It was like with the hair spiked up and the jaw open and like the eyes wide. Like it's pretty iconic. If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, you can look it up. But GamePro is pretty much known for that review scale that they used. And they were a bit more lenient when it came to video game reviews. So they would literally give perfect scores to a game that maybe wasn't perfect, but I guess they were judging it on different criteria, which, I mean, it's fine, you know, as long as they stated and people aren't assuming when they buy a game that they gave a perfect score to, like, oh, this is the most amazing game ever. But they definitely were more lenient on their reviews. And GamePro also had some special issues, like their 100th issue. They had some guides as well and some strategy guides. So GamePro was another big one, and that one lasted pretty much into the early 2000s or late 2000s, just like EGM did. Then there was like Game Informer, which is still around. Game Informer was a little bit different back then because it was more on a smaller scale as it is now. But Game Informer was another one that was out back then. And then you had Nintendo Power, which Nintendo Power was actually endorsed by Nintendo themselves. And that one was pretty much for anyone that was just Nintendo and that's all I needed in their life. Nintendo Power was for them. It had everything Nintendo: products, accessories, games, consoles, interviews, and when I say all those things, I mean like they had the previews, they had the reviews, they had interviews with like creators like Shigeru Miyamoto and stuff like that. Howard Lincoln was interviewed on there as well. They had a lot of info that was just Nintendo specific, which again is not a bad thing. It's pretty cool to kind of get that much information on a company, especially if it's your favorite company and it's your favorite game console and stuff like that. So they were definitely huge in the late 80s, early 90s, when they were popular here in the US, or more so than they are now. And people wanted to be in the know with Nintendo, so definitely a big magazine and one of the most iconic ones. Again, another magazine that made it into the late 2000s before it ended up kind of finishing its run. But Nintendo Power was another good one, and they had some other special issues as well. They had strategy guides. I had some strategy guides myself from Nintendo Power, like the Metroid Prime, the Pokemon strategy guides. So they kind of really catered to that Nintendo audience pretty well, I'm going to be honest. They gave a lot of info, a lot of strategy guides to help their players. And they were just a very well run. So I will say that Nintendo Power was pretty cool when it came to what they focused on. There were other game magazines that were kind of focusing on one system at the time. One of them that I remember was Turbo Play. And Turbo Play was one magazine in the early 90s that focused just on the TurboGrafx-16. Which I think was pretty big for that console because it wasn't exactly the most popular one back then. It didn't really take off. The company, or I should say North American branch, didn't do as good a job as promoting it as they should have. Because in Japan, the TurboGrafx-16 was very popular. And over there, it was actually known as the PC Engine. But it was extremely popular and actually came in second in the 16-bit era, you know, right behind the Super Nintendo. And Genesis actually came in last place or third place in Japan. So yeah, it was very popular in Japan, and unfortunately the company didn't do a good job promoting it here. So but yeah, it was definitely a good magazine for the TurboGrafx fans to see and get their own magazine and representation in the format and get some opinions on games that were honest and, you know, not just put in there because, you know, people are complaining, which happened on a lot of other magazines. So they got to be on the spotlight for this magazine, again called Turbo Play. And then, like I said, there were other magazines that focused exclusively on certain things like cheats. So Tips and Tricks was one that focused on cheat codes, and they would release again monthly, and they would just have like a list of cheats for every system. One of my favorite features, actually they had some features as well, was I can't remember what the feature was called, to be honest, but it focused on what was going on in Japan and they would have like cool products from Japan or just updates on there. So I remember Tips and Tricks was kind of where I saw what's called the PSX. And when I say the PSX, I'm not talking about the original PlayStation. I'm talking about a certain version of the PS2 that was a different design, looked more like a DVD player. And it was like bulky and white. And I remember reading about the PSX there. And I was like, wow, this looks pretty cool. You know, if this came out here, I would have gotten it. And I remember hearing about stuff on there through Tips and Tricks again, like about Pokemon Crystal and some cell phone connectivity they had going on. Stuff like that. They just had like random, I would say like curiosities. You know, just like, oh, that's cool. Like, I wish, you know, we'd get that here and stuff like that. So Tips and Tricks was more than just cheats. It did have certain features as well. And I believe they did have a letters to the editor as well. So that was another good magazine. And it ended up going out in the, I think, early 2000s, actually. That one didn't go into the mid or late 2000s. So those were some of the heavy hitters as far as video game magazines in the 90s. And it's one of those things where as time went along and the advancement of technology and these magazines slowly went out of favor with people. And, you know, because you could go online and you could access information a lot faster. And as internet got more widespread, people just went more toward online. And these companies, these video game magazines slowly ended up going out of business. And like I said, GamePro is no longer in existence. Nintendo Power, Nintendo stopped making their video game magazine, I believe, in like 2012. These other magazines, Tips and Tricks, went out. So it just ended up being a thing where either you were able to make the move successfully to online or you didn't. And the one magazine that's still around from that time is Game Informer. Game Informer, again, they're available through GameStop. And in addition to that, they do have an online website where they're kind of continuing with their articles and interviews. And they, I think they've even gone into some stuff like podcasts and stuff like that. So Game Informer is kind of adapted to a certain extent with the online world now. And they're definitely, yeah, like I said, they're one of the ones that is still around. But a lot of the ones I went over here are sadly no longer making new content. But you know, it's one of those things where if you heard or liked anything you heard, you can always go check them out on online. There's some web pages where people have posted these magazines as PDF files and stuff like that. You can go ahead and take a read. And if you really like them, you can always go on to eBay and you can find these older issues. Some of them, depending on how rare or old they are, will be a little bit more money. But a lot of these are in the $10 to $15 range, and you can get whatever magazine or issue you want. So magazines, I think, had a lot to offer, especially back then with video games and giving that information that the gamers wanted to know. And it's just such a shame that they, you know, I mean, it's the natural way of things where something new comes up and you either adapt or you don't adapt, and a lot of these video game magazine companies couldn't. So, but like I said, they're there to read and have those memories and definitely have good times and really feel that nostalgia when you're reading some of these magazines. I myself have been able to get quite a few, and it's always a trip reading through these magazines, seeing what they said about a certain game or a certain preview coming out or a console, and just looking back and seeing, man, they thought this would succeed and it didn't, or they thought it wouldn't succeed and it did. Like, for example, one of the biggest things or systems that EGM consistently came after was the original Game Boy. They were always hating on it, saying it's old, it's antiquated technology, it's black and white. And this thing kept saying it was going to die. And, you know, I think in one of the buyer's guides, they had to eat their words, because that was when Pokemon came out and they had this whole revival. And they're like, oh, yeah, we were wrong about this. And this console is still around, very strong. So Like I said, it's just funny to look back. And for me, these old video game magazines serve as a sort of time capsule where you can kind of look at, you know, the games, the consoles. You can see what these people thought of the video games and where they thought video games would go. You can see the ads. The ads, some of these ads are hilarious. You definitely don't see ads like this online. And they were just, you know, to catch obviously the reader's attention, which they were aiming for like teenagers and early people in the early 20s. But some of these ads are hilarious and worth, you know, the reason alone, enough reason alone to own these, some of these issues. But yeah, and then reading through some of the letters to the editor and stuff like that. That's another kind of time capsule to kind of see what people were excited about, you know, the gamers of the day, what they were looking forward to. And some of these, you know, were in their video game camps, like, oh, I'm a Sega person, or I'm a Nintendo person, or I'm a TurboGrafx person, which, you know, I remember reading one of the letters to the editor in 91, I think, and they were complaining, like, you guys never put TurboGrafx reviews or any TurboGrafx coverage. And I think that was always cool, you know, kind of looking back, and you can see now why there was no coverage, if there was, or if there wasn't, because it wasn't popular here. But the market, there's always a market for any sort of video game console or game or stuff like that. And that's the perfect way to kind of see what people were into back then. And if you ever want to take down a trip down memory lane, I know, unfortunately, there's no time machine, but video game magazines are a perfect way to do it. And you won't be disappointed. I kid you not. Some of these things are gold as far as the information they have. And obviously, a lot of these articles and interviews aren't online because this was before internet was a thing. So some of these are exclusive now, which are just hidden away in some of these issues that no one knows about. So definitely, you guys want to check them out. Again, you can go on eBay or any other website that has obviously older things where you can buy and sell. And maybe, who knows, maybe if you go to like an old bookstore in your city, you can find some of these video game magazines. Well, as I come to a close here, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Like I said, it's one of the topics I wanted to get to. Video game magazines are definitely near to my heart. Like I said, I have a collection of some EGM issues and some Nintendo Power issues, because, I mean, like I said, it's a time capsule, and I'm all for the nostalgia and reliving those memories and stuff. And, you know, it's definitely a trip. And I think a lot of people can use it and just kind of remind themselves how far things have come along in the video game industry, and just kind of see where their favorite franchises got to start. So by all means, guys, go ahead and take a look at some of these classic magazines. So if you guys like what you heard, go ahead and give me a like, follow on Instagram. I'm on there as Retro Nostalgia Podcast. That's where you can go to for keeping up with the show, any upcoming episodes, any new episodes that have been posted. And you can always comment on there. You know, you guys can go on there and comment your favorite magazine to let me know what your favorite video game magazine was at the time, and what your fond memories were of that magazine. So until next time, guys, remember to stay excellent.
You've been listening to the Retro Nostalgia Podcast. We release new episodes every Friday. If you like what you hear, please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and follow us on Instagram at Retro Nostalgia Podcast. Until next time, be excellent to each other.